This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, July 15th, 2003. At the end of April of this year, the United States Department of State released a performance-based roadmap to a permanent two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. For short, it's called the Roadmap, and it was released by a quartet, the United States, the European Union, the United Nations, and Russia. The destination, it says, is a final and comprehensive settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by 2005. It's a two-state solution, one in which the Palestinian people will have, quote, a leadership acting decisively against terror, and that they would live side by side, guaranteeing, quote, security with Israel. Also, the states of the Arab League, the Beirut Arab League summit, as was specified last year, call for, quote, the acceptance of Israel as a neighbor living in peace and security. The roadmap, a dead end for the Palestinian people, is taking aim today. Ralph?
The roadmap, in fact, is a formula for the liquidation of the Palestinian struggle. The real roadmap had been spelled out quite explicitly when the preparations for the Madrid conference were being prepared, which in essence called for the collusion of the Palestinian leadership in abandonment of any aspiration for a democratic and secular Palestine, and even for any semblance of sovereignty on the remnant territory in the 22% of Palestine that remained in the West Bank and Gaza. Daniel Williams described the process in the Los Angeles Times on September 20th, 1991. The pace of construction in the West Bank and Gaza is exploding, a project that reflects the relentless drive of both the Labor Party and of the Likud, both the politics of Shamir Peres and of the then Housing Minister Ariel Sharon, are as follows, the Times continues, to blanket the territories with Israeli settlements. No one is placing a limit on the money that will be spent. It is coming in any event from the American subsidy. The ministry does not have to account for its programs to Parliament. And this relentless drive for settlement and occupation and for fragmentation of the remnant land that remained to the Palestinians was summarized under something called Sharon's Star Plan, as described by Haaretz, to establish cities, villages, and settlements all along the Green Line, that is to say, the line dividing the territory occupied prior to 1967 and thereafter, with, quote, the object of obliterating it through the creation of a continuity of Jewish settlement throughout the West Bank and between the West Bank and Israel. The Star Plan, however, as was explained in the Los Angeles Times at that time, was the continuation of the plan of settlement adopted in 1980, supported by both major parties in Israel, incorporating the new settlements within Israeli society. The explicit purpose, quote, a mad pace of construction in the occupied territory such that facts on the ground will eradicate any possibility of any semblance of Palestinian self-rule, quote, unquote.
Ralph, what people have to realize is that of the entire area of the State of Israel, of what is recognized today as the boundaries of Israel, only 67,000 acres are actually state dominion that the Israeli government took over from the British Mandate. All the rest, 4.5 million acres, the most of what is recognized as the State of Israel, belong in law to Palestinians who were driven out of the country by massacre. The Israelis have long-term leases on the property in which they reside. And at this moment, in order to substantiate the total occupation and dispossession of the Palestinians from what is called the absentee property that's managed by the Israeli Land Administration and originally was taken over by the Jewish National Fund, the Israelis are planning to privatize this land to, in fact, fully dispossess the Palestinians of their property.
Maya, this was so articulated in the publications of the time, particularly the Israeli publications. Listen to our Haaretz on September 27, 1991. The planned doubling of the Israeli population in the West Bank and the planned settlement program will speed up the strangulation of the Palestinian people in the West Bank. Israel will hold control of the land, the water, the budgeting and planning, while 2 million Palestinians will be delegated to closed pockets, isolated and cut off from one another, with a low and backward standard of living, and blocks of Israeli settlements surrounding them, imposing rigid security, political and economic control over them, unquote. Anthony Kuhn, in the study Urban Planning in the West Bank, April 1991, 60% of the West Bank has already been appropriated outright. The remainder has been subject to blanket restrictions and will fall just short of outright expropriation, but the de facto rule will remain essentially Israeli. Virtually all the land was closed and requisitioned, classified as state land or abandoned property, the latter phrase meaning construction of settlements or roads connecting settlements, the road system built integrating Jewish settlements in the West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem with Israel physically and economically, while fragmenting and containing all existing Palestinian communities. That is the real roadmap. That is the delineation of this plan to relegate Palestinian existence to that of little Swiss cheese-like cantons, utterly dominated, controlled, atomized, and helpless, with the rubric of self-determination only through the security apparatus of the Palestinian Authority, which is a surrogate for Israeli policing of the population, the pacification of the people themselves.
The position of the Palestinian Liberation Organization was articulated in 1968. It had been for a democratic and secular society in Palestine. Now, this is a minimum demand of a movement for national liberation. It is one that we recognize as the right of all peoples throughout the world. And in order to rationalize a exclusively Jewish state, people have an exceptionalism for the state of Israel. In 20 years ago, Khalid al-Hassan, who was a founder of Fatah, the major organization of the Palestine Liberation Organization, one who had close ties to the Saudi King Fahd and the Moroccan King Hassan. Khalid al-Hassan, who was a right-hand man of Yasser Arafat, was the architect of the two-state solution, the two-state formula for accepting the Israeli state. It required a change of the Palestinian charter. And this solution, so-called solution, actually a dead end, one that over these past years has never led anywhere except to further dispossession of the Palestinian people, this plan had been worked out with none other than C. Vernon Walters. And Walters was the deputy director of the CIA at the time. But even Hassan did not have illusions about the purpose of this so-called two-state formula. He said prior to the first Madrid conference, quote, "This peace conference is not for the Palestinian question. This is to normalize, naturalize Arab-Israeli relations, and you need Palestinians for the icing on their cake."
Newsweek on October 28th, with respect to the Madrid conference, had a headline that read, Baker sets a date for Middle East conference, but it's too late for a land for peace deal on the West Bank. The settlement town of Ariel, but recently a tent village, has 5 public schools, a college, 32 kindergartens, movie theaters, tennis courts, soccer fields, shopping malls, a 102-room hotel and industrial park with 75 factories producing everything from electronics to textiles. The population will have grown tenfold by the year 2000, Deputy Mayor Yigal Rosenthal pointed from the heights surrounding countryside, and he proclaimed, "See those empty hills? We will cover them with homes and shops. This is the new geographical center of the Israeli state." Newsweek concluded, "The settlements in place on the occupied West Bank do many Palestinians dream of statehood. It is impossible to drive for more than 3 minutes without encountering Jewish settlements and the Israeli army. Housing Minister Sharon will double the number of West Bank settlers to 200,000 by 1993. 10 years ago, Sharon drew up the list of the last of a series of Israeli government maps that allocate even skimpier portions for nominal Palestinian control, and there will never be another. The settlements throughout the territory make it impossible, Newsweek states, to draw a border between Israeli control and Palestinian presence. The settlers have won," unquote. Now, this delineation of the series of plans that were put forward, which essentially are the same plan, whether it's the Star Plan or the Alon Plan or the Sharon Plan, they represent the same basic objective, which is the liquidation of any meaningful form of Palestinian self-determination, the fragmentation of the population, the utter control of the land and the water and of the terrain, and the designation of the Palestinians as a Bantustanized population.
Rafael Eitan, the former chief of staff of the Israeli Armed Forces, who had been a protege of Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, and also, by the way, Ariel Sharon, the now prime minister, who had been the housing minister at the time when you were talking about developing the Star Plan, was also a protege of David Ben-Gurion. Now, Eitan and Sharon devised what is the real settlement, on-the-ground settlement policy in the occupied territories. As far back as 1983, 20 years ago, Rafael Eitan stated unequivocally, and it was published in Yediot Aharonot on April 4th, 1983, quote, "We declare openly that the Arabs have no right to settle on even 1 centimeter of Eretz Yisrael. Force is all they do or ever will understand. We shall use the ultimate force until the Palestinians come crawling to us on all fours." And Eitan then went before the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, and as reported in the New York Times on April 14, 1983, he said, quote, "When we have settled the land, all the Arabs will be able to do will be to scurry around like drug roaches in a bottle." Okay, I was going to say that throughout these various peace processes, these so-called processes of Madrid, Gaza, Jericho, the Tenet Plan, the Mitchell Plan, Oslo, what we've got here now is, since the Oslo, there are these Jews only, and that's what they're specified, Jews only superhighways throughout the West Bank. And at the Camp David of July 2000, where the Palestinians were offered 22% of the territory, Israel was to control the borders, the skies, the underground, the water resources, and 80% of the settlers and the Jews-only highways that grid throughout the West Bank, north, south, east, and west, were to still remain in their control. As well, there are today 150 Israeli checkpoints throughout the West Bank, Gaza, and these hinder free movement of Palestinians, prevent them not only from entering pre-67 Israel, but from going from place to place throughout the West Bank. And a little later, we're going to talk about the huge wall, the wall that is resembling the Warsaw Ghetto, that is going north to south and in creating vast enclaves of Palestinian territory.
Yesha Shafat Harkabi of Hebrew University spelled it out very clearly. It boils down to a form of limited autonomy that allows Arabs to decide what they will have for lunch that day. They can direct such services as trash collection, unquote. That is the essence. And the study which was made by Adam Hanya and Catherine Cook in Middle Eastern Report Online, called The Roadmap to the Oslo Cul-de-sac, articulates how the so-called roadmap is but a revisiting of the original plans to eradicate the Palestinian movement. Quote, the roadmap offers no path forward. It repackages the Oslo process and all of the elements of that plan. The army will redeploy outside Palestinian population centers, but just on their perimeter. They're increasing the risk immediately to Israeli soldiers, handing the policing tasks to Palestinian security forces under their control and CIA direction, while maintaining the occupation through periodic closures, raids, assassinations, and perpetual checkpoints. The Oslo Accord process is echoed in the roadmap. It sets forth, once again, a de facto control of the entire area by the Israelis, while the Palestinians have the task of policing their own and of eliminating resistance, imprisoning and actually assassinating those who resist total subjugation within Palestine, whether that resistance takes an armed expression, a political expression, or any form of objection or disaffection from the planned subjugation of the Palestinian people. In a long series of strategic plans, the study shows, the Alon plan proposed by General Yigal Alon, Deputy Prime Minister of the Labor Party after the 1967 war, called for the annexation of one-third of the West Bank along the Jordan River and the Dead Sea, Israeli settlements to be constructed at a mad pace along a north-south axis of the floor of the Jordan Valley on the eastern side of the West Bank, a second line of settlements to be constructed on the highlands overlooking the valleys, with roads connecting these two settlement blocks. At the same time, rings of settlements were planned around the city of Jerusalem. In this way, the 110,000 Palestinians in East Jerusalem would be encircled, unable to reach into the hinterland of the West Bank. The final version of this plan in July 1967 proposed establishing a nominal Palestinian entity in 40% of the remnant West Bank, carved into Swiss cheese elements, while Israel annexed East Jerusalem, the Jordan Valley, the Hebron Hills, the south of the West Bank, and the southern part of the Gaza Strip. This is nothing but the revisiting of all these plans under whatever name, roadmap, star plan, Alon plan, Sharon plan. The formula is that of the subjugation of the Palestinian people, the physical liquidation of the political resistance of that population that is over 100 years old. That is the dynamic, effectively blurring the distinctions between the so-called Green Line and the West Bank itself, extending from Jenin in the north to Bethlehem in the south. The settlement plan involves the confiscation of West Bank land on such a scale that nothing effective remains for any form of Palestinian control or sovereignty.
Ralph, the true sentiment of the Palestinians was illustrated this Sunday, July 13th. When the Ramallah offices of the Palestinian pollster Khalil Shikaki, who publishes in Foreign Affairs and works closely with the Council on Foreign Relations here in the United States, Khalil Shikaki was about to release a new survey, And according to the Jerusalem Post, the survey was to show that most Palestinian refugees were ready to abandon claims to return to Israel. Now, Shikaki's Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research had done surveys in Jordan, Lebanon, the West Bank, and Gaza. And as with most surveys, it depends upon how you formulate the question. When he asked if people would return to an Israel that was meant Israeli citizenship, Israeli laws, and an Israeli social environment, people denied that they would return. People announced that they wouldn't return. In fact, what happened is throughout the West Bank, leaflets were distributed announcing what Shikaki was about to do, and they stormed, they threw eggs, they were saying, "We are here to announce that our right of return is a sacred right."
Let's be very clear about this. The Shikaki plan was a plan that was devised in the Council of Foreign Relations, of which he is a member, and for which he has been one of the main consultants about liquidating the Palestinian struggle. So,
Ralph, he's not a member, but he works closely with the Council on Foreign Relations and is published often in Foreign Affairs.
And not only in Foreign Affairs, but in the internal bulletins of the Council, he is a staple for the formulations with respect to Palestine. And
along with Shikaki, there's the Al-Quds University president, Sara Nusseibeh, who, again, is a prominent Palestinian. And it is Nusseibeh who was also a spokesperson for the state, stating over and over again that the Palestinians must give up the right of return. Now, the right of return is for the 4 million Palestinians who are living in exile, primarily in refugee camps in Lebanon, Syria, and in Jordan. It is the heart and soul of the drive of these Palestinians. Also, many of the people in the West Bank and Gaza are in refugee camps, displaced from their homes in pre-67 Israel.
Maya, the document that I was citing before, the roadmap as a recapitulation of the prior plans for the liquidation of the Palestinian movement that was so well put together by Adam Hamida and Catherine Cook, takes us a little bit further, because from the Alon plan we reach the Sharon plan, and the logic of the Sharon plan was the further extended with a comprehensive settlement scheme that was presented by the World Zionist Organization in October 1978, which called for the settlements around and between all major Palestinian population centers in the West Bank. And as this report cites, the end result followed closely by both Likud and Labor governments over the last two decades is the division of the West Bank into three separate areas: the northern towns of Jenin, Tul Karem, Qalqiya, and Nablus, the central area of Ramallah and outlying areas of Jerusalem, the southern region around Bethlehem and Hebron, a strategy that calls for Israeli settlements that can be constructed around each of these areas, between the Palestinian cities within each area, connected by Israeli-controlled security roads, with additional settlements, the minority population, by which they mean the Palestinians, finding it impossible to form any political or territorial continuity. This is a scheme for liquidation of Palestinian self-organization, let alone autonomy, self-determination, or sovereignty. And yet a third modification adopted by the Israeli Knesset in 1977 relegated more of the entity in the Palestinian areas to Israeli control. This, the Begin plan, named after Menachem Begin, which called for autonomy for the Palestinian population, represented this autonomy through the systematic removal of any contiguous area for Palestinian administrative control. It translated into politics on the ground with the establishment of the notorious Village Leagues, which began in Hebron in 1978. The leagues, which were effectively Israeli and Mossad agents, collaborators with the Israeli military, entailed the physical liquidation of the Palestinian militants and resistors to these schemes.
To go back to the viability, Ralph, that you were talking about, the plans to make any entity on the West Bank not even viable economically, it's also ecologically. Israel uses or diverts 85% of the water that is available on the West Bank. Now, prior to the establishment of the Palestinian Authority, the West Bank and Gaza were ruled by military authority under the military rules that date back to the mandate, the British mandate. And permits were necessary for constructing wells, and these permits were hardly ever given. Also for rebuilding or constructing homes, so that the Palestinian, there was a stranglehold over the Palestinians, and most of the houses that were built then were done so without permits, and the Israelis then use it as an excuse to tear them down. But in that process, the Israelis diverted 85% of the water. In Gaza, 5,000 settlers comprise less than 1% of the population, but they use 60% of the drinking water. And in the West Bank, the settlers take 37% of the water, leaving only 63% for the 1.9 million Palestinians who are living in the West Bank. So the settlers, on the average, use 600 liters of water a day. The World Health Organization states that the minimum daily standard is 100 liters, but the Palestinians do not even have 100 liters. They are left with only 70 liters of water today. Since October of 2002, there has been a ban on Palestinians drilling any new wells, so that the Palestinians are left with the very old wells that have been there for generations. 26% of the Palestinian West Bank cities are not connected to water systems. That's over 150 villages. They depend for their water on rainfall, springs, and water tankers. But today, as there are the 150 checkpoints, it's almost impossible for the tankers to get through to these villages. Thus, in the West Bank, in many of the villages, Palestinians are spending as much as 40% of their household income on water alone, and this is not even enough water to meet the minimum daily standard, according to the World Health Organization. Ralph?
The implementation of this requires effectively a collaborationist security force. Leave aside the fact that the Palestinian Security Force and Dahlan are actually directly under the control of the Central Intelligence Agency, are obligated to consult on a daily basis with the Central Intelligence Agency. Jerusalem Post on October 14, 1991, described a lunch provided by Egyptian Prime Minister Amr Moussa, senior Arafat aide Yasser Abed-Rabo, and Major General Yuri Sagi, the head of military intelligence of the Israeli Armed Forces, along with Major General Danny Rothschild, the coordinator for the Israeli Army in the territory. Their joint efforts, quote, were to establish security and suppress opposition, unquote, as the Jerusalem Post described it. They established two coordinating committees to supervise security. John Emanuel reported in the Jerusalem Post on October 15th of that year how this was to be brought into effect. The Palestinian police force is recruiting 7,000 applicants from over 30,000 who are being screened. Hassan Abed-Libed, the deputy head of the technical committee of the Israeli police force, described it as follows. This police force will be headed by a high-ranking officer in the Israeli police, Ibrahim Mohana. Mohana was an officer in the Egyptian secret police and had served in the Israeli peace forces police forces for 30 years. So we're talking about the actual spies of the Israeli armed forces now being trotted out as the security apparatus for a Palestinian authority to implement the liquidation of sovereignty on the ground and the arrest, removal and elimination of militants, of resistors, of the very articulation of Palestinian aspiration in the subject territories.
And Ralph, what they're insisting upon with the roadmap is the consolidation of the Palestinian police force, because what happened in the process since 91 is the Palestinian police force had loyalty to their leaders, and they were divided by political sectors. Now, under Mohammed Dahlan, there will be a closer connection and under closer control directly with the CIA.
And Maya Al-Quds, the Arabic Jerusalem newspaper, in the period that I'm describing, October 15th, 1991, wrote the following: 40 of the special selected army and police operatives, a group hand-picked from former Israeli police force officers, have been provided special training to control Palestinian security now and in the future. And that was spelled out, but also implemented on a systematic scale. The criterion for membership in the security forces with a nominal Palestinian name is prior spying and collusion and collaboration with the Mossad, with the Shin Bet, with the Israeli occupation forces themselves.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Roadmap, A Dead End for the Palestinian People. This is WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial and on the internet at www.wbai.org. You can reach us at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net. You can also check out our internet site, www.takingaim.info, to return to our program. Ralph, an important study appeared on the internet. It's on the internet at the B'TSELEM, that's B'Tselem, that's an Israeli human rights organization, and it's called Behind the Barrier: Human Rights Violations as a Result of Israel's Separation Barrier, and it was produced in March 2003. It goes into great detail about the new north to south, and in many ways east to west, what I call the Warsaw Ghetto, the surrounding of many of the Palestinian villages of resistance, like Tulkarm and Kalkia, and creating enclaves that mean many 210 Palestinians in 67 village towns and cities have no access to the other Palestinians on the West Bank or Gaza.
That's not just rhetoric, Maya, because the Warsaw Ghetto was the model. The actual Wehrmacht plans for the creation of the Warsaw Ghetto and for the crushing of the Jewish uprising within the Warsaw Ghetto, the Nazi Wehrmacht plans for the creation of the ghetto and the crushing of the resistance to it, were the model for the Israeli armed forces. Those Wehrmacht plans were the model for Jenin. They were the model for Nablus. They were the model for the wall. They are the model for the ghettoization of the West Bank itself. It is not out of keeping with the designation by the leading theologian of Israel, the late Yeshayahu Leibowitz, who described the Zionists as Judeo-Nazis. This is indeed the Nazification of the West Bank and Gaza. This is the liquidation of the Palestinian struggle, the subjugation of the Palestinian people, and the ghettoization of that suffering population.
And with it comes new language, and the establishment in Israel of a new authority called the Seam Area Authority, because this wall This ghettoization of the Palestinians is called a seam. There is a strip of land that goes along the two sides of the Green Line and in many cases expropriates a good deal of the West Bank. And let us look at what this it actually is. It was the idea in November 2000 of then Prime Minister Ehud Barak, and it was supposedly to be a barrier between the West Bank and pre-67 Israel. In case people don't realize, there already is a huge fence surrounding Gaza, a huge fence denying the access of the Palestinians and the movement of the Palestinians. Now, for this barrier, the IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Forces, protect the eastern side of the seam area, and the border police protect the western side. By protect, they mean assault the Palestinians. Now, this is, as I said, going to separate Tul Karm, where there is the Palestinian resistance survives, and also Qalqiya, 210,000 people. The main component is an electronic fence. An electronic fence, much in the way, that's using very high-tech electronics with video cameras and sensor devices that can tell if anybody gets near it. There's also a service road that's bordered by another fence, a barbed wire fence. And east of the service road, there is a trench. A very wide trench so that motor vehicles, if they happen to crash through either of the two fences, are then stuck within this trench. Then there are three paths that are west of the fence. There's a trace road that will reveal the footprints of any person who happens to cross the fence. There is a patrol road, and then there is an armored vehicle road for all those heavy equipment and machine gun turret armored vehicles. And then another barbed wire fence is constructed along this path. Four fences, trace roads, electronic fences, barbed wire, several barbed wire fences, ditches, and what we have here is a big swath about 60 meters wide, and in some cases 100 meters wide, north to south, and enclosing many of the Palestinian villages, dividing some of the villages so people cannot even get to their agricultural land. Ralph?
Yes, this document behind the barrier sets forth in meticulous detail the meaning of the wall, because the wall is another form of confiscation. Hundreds of yards long, encompassing whole towns and villages and separating them from their agricultural lands, it is but the little continuation of the seizure of Palestinian land and the ghettoization of the population. When I wrote Madrid is Not the Road to Peace in November 1st, 1991, and then the significance of the Gaza-Jericho Accords on October 23rd, 1993, at the time we sounded the alarm about these plans and the illusions about these plans that so-called two-state advocates and the self-appointed lawyers for the Palestinian people were pushing with such ardor. And we attempted to document the hallucinatory nature of these schemes, and indeed we cited at the time the American sociologist C. Wright Mills in his famous discussion in his book World War III about what C. Wright Mills then called crackpot realism. When you sign on for the plans of your oppressor, when you provide them with a tactical rationalization, when you blind yourself to the reality that these are but mechanisms for sustaining permanent control, then you become part of the problem and a colluder in the process. The Palestinian villages find themselves walled in, not out. Seizing Palestinian land, writes Greg Meyer on July 12, 2003 in the New York Times. Kirbat Jubara, West Bank, Ishanawad's well-tended gardens, anchored by olive and palm trees and lined with pink roses, were once a soothing place to spend summer afternoons. With Israel's new security fence closing in on his village, Mr. Awad feels a sense of captivity. The fence has trapped us. We have no way to live a normal life. The barriers stretch along much of the northern West Bank. The effect of this has been to separate us from our land. The fence juts deep into the West Bank, the article continues, creating isolated Palestinian enclaves like Kirbat Jubara, south of the city of Tukaram. These are, in essence, the de facto confiscation of our land on the ground. Chain-link fences topped with barbed wire, deep trenches running along each side, parallel strips of asphalt built for Israeli security patrols. It is like a continuous armed prison wherever we exist. Well over 100 settlements in the West Bank, this article describes, has sent the fence line zigging and zagging, placing these Palestinian villages on the Israeli side along with their lands. Once prosperous villages are no longer able to make use of the land on which they depended for their agriculture and for their subsistence. 60,000 Palestinian olive trees have been seized by Israel in this process without compensation for the lands seized, compensation that the Palestinians would turn down in the first place because it amounts to acquiescence in Israeli policy. And it describes how Tulkarm is the launching pad for many of these operations, along with the targeting of Kalkia. Little consolation for the residents of Kirbat Jubara, poultry farmers whose businesses have been destroyed, their chickens seized, their means of subsistence eliminated.
Ralph, the percentage of land used for agriculture in Tulkarm, Kalkia, and Jenin is the highest in the West Bank, 59% in Tulkarm, 50% in Jenin, 46% in Kalkia. These are the most productive agricultural areas of the West Bank and the ones that have a bountiful supply of water. Now they are split off and they cannot get their produce to the rest of the people in the West Bank. Now, the land is confiscated through military appropriation. It's called the Military Needs Order. And since the beginning of the 1980s, Israel has declared land in the West Bank, quote, state land, if it is not registered in the land's registry, according to Beth Solom, and if it is not cultivated for 3 consecutive years. Now, what you have with this barrier wall going up, people cannot get to their land to cultivate it unless they go through rigor, these checkpoints where they have to wait, and also the checkpoints close at night from dawn to dusk. It's a virtual imprisonment. So if they do not cultivate their land for 3 years, Israel will then take the land away from its owner and claim it as state land. So what we have here is an expropriation of further West Bank land, not even beyond the seizure orders that of the immediate land for creating the barriers.
Maya, the South African Press Association and the Mail and Guardian Online of Zambia wrote incredibly revealing articles about what they call the massive concrete wall encircling the West Bank towns represents. They take the example of Kalkia. The 8-meter-high wall built by the Israeli army will separate 40,000 inhabitants of this West Bank town. Located in the north of the West Bank, Kalkia is bang on the green line, the boundary which separates the Jewish state from the Palestinian territories. It describes how the route chosen by the Israeli authorities for the fence has encircled Kalkia and cut them off from the West Bank itself. Its only link to the outside is an Israeli army roadblock to the east of the town. We are in a prison, a walled prison, stated the town's mayor, Mahrouf Sahran. The line of fencing around Kakiya has cut off the town from its farmland, 80% of the farmland, depriving the Palestinians of, as well, 17 natural water sources. What is this but the walled ghettoization, the Warsaw ghettoization of Kalkia, along with the remaining areas of Palestinian settlement in the proximity of the Green Line? It is the continuation of the process of the seizure of the land and the enslavement of the population.
Ralph, is that we were talking about the production of vegetables. Azun Atma, which is southeast of Kalkia, is now totally enclosed by this barrier. And the 10 trucks of produce that left the village daily for market, one to Israel and nine to the West Bank, are not able to get there. The greenhouses with the cucumbers, the tomatoes, the cabbage, the cauliflower, the eggplant and the beans, the very food that is vital for the survival of the Palestinian people, is not getting to them. But egregiously also is the barrier around East Jerusalem, cutting off the Palestinians of East Jerusalem from physically from the Palestinians of the West Bank, cutting off the people of the West Bank from access to Jerusalem, where many of them had worked. And what's happened, according what's happened is that people who lived in villages and worked in Jerusalem are being fired because they show up for work late, frequently, or they cannot even show up for work. And all the merchants are not able to get deliveries of supplies or to get their material to people outside of Jerusalem. It is full partition.
Maya, the Israeli peace group Peace Now on July 10th issued a statement in which it stated that Sharon is lying about the settlements. Not only Sharon, but Mahmoud Abbas, his partner in this crime. The lies take the following form. Peace Now spokesman Yariv Ubenheimer stated that the Israeli army removed eight small outposts last month and then erected 10 larger outposts in the same period with Israeli army direction. The report by Ubenheimer points out that only one small populated outpost was removed and immediately replaced with a larger one, quote, giving the misleading impression that it is removing settlements when in fact the opposite is true. 200 additional settlements have been constructed in the very time frame when there was the nominal reduction of the same. And the settlements linked by the extensive net of Jewish-only roads bypassing and encircling Palestinian population centers advanced the ghettoization, I am quoting, of Palestinian towns, further cutting them off from each other, describes Peace Now in giving the lie to the fictive cover for the roadmap of a reduction, even nominal, of settlements. And the same charade pertains to the treatment of prisoners. Prisoners as hostages, writes Khalid Amira in Al-Ahram in Cairo. Israel's adamant refusal to free over 6,500 Palestinian political prisoners once again is galvanizing the Palestinian public. The Israeli government agreed to release potentially 350 prisoners, mostly administrative detainees whose prison sentences are about to expire. But according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, while this has been on the board, they have increased the number of those detained tenfold. So in essence, while they parade before the eyes of a fawning and captive press the prospect of releasing 350 people who in fact have not yet been released, they are increasing by a tenfold margin the numbers of those who are being detained. Thus, the Al-Aram describes this as Israeli blackmail over the prisoners issue, using prisoners as hostages, and intensifying the detention of people, the disappearance of people, thousands of people. Thousands who are not even acknowledged and who have disappeared, and hundreds of Palestinian children who are held under these conditions.
Well, Ralph, the Palestinians and the have a problem because the Israelis are saying that they won't release anybody who has the potential of being a dissident, and anybody and everybody has the potential of opposition to the Israeli state.
Well, now yes, please, ma'am.
For the roadmap, already Sharon's ministers are preparing for what next, because this roadmap is as unstable as Oslo, Madrid, Camp David, you name the prior so-called formula for peace. And Sharon's Accidental Tourist is an article by Carolyn Glick that appeared July 10th in the Jerusalem Post. And she refers to Tourism Minister Benny Allon. And she writes, he is preparing for what he believes is the predestined failure of the roadmap. Alone's father is a retired Supreme Court justice, and Alone is a resident of the West Bank town of Bet El. Alone is very clear. For him, Jordan is Palestine, and he, along with other ministers and people in Israel, are preparing a large press campaign because they believe that the place to get support for their project is actually in the United States, not in Israel or elsewhere in the world, but in the United States. And they're going directly to Congress. They've been meeting with Tom DeLay, Sam Brownback, and other congressmen like them, and as well with the Christian Coalition. They're very closely tied to Pat Robertson, Gary Baer, and others. As Alone says, they have a lot of power. So what is their plan? Alone states, quote, my plan is based on the understanding that a Palestinian state west of the Jordan River is a failed proposition. Such a state will have no economic viability. It will have no territorial contiguity. It will be a destabilizing force that will immediately work to undermine Israel and Jordan by force and political subversion. And it will have no international legitimacy in the UN to do so. Until 1988, both Jordan and every Israeli government understood this. My plan, says Alon, is based on a regional solution that recognizes the fact that Jordan is Palestine.
Maya, this is borne out by an important article in the Jewish Forward on July 11th. Sharon Mum, as chief minister, slams roadmap in New York talk. Prime Minister Sharon has no plans to rebuke his senior minister, cabinet minister, who publicly lambasted President Bush's Middle East policy in New York in a briefing this week, stating that he had support of a ranking presidential advisor, namely Richard Perle. The minister, Effie Aitam, of the National Religious Party, slammed the Middle East, quote, roadmap, unquote, in a high-level talk at the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, declaring that the president's plan was, quote, worse than the Oslo Accords, unquote. Aitam told the 30 leaders present that Israel would never accept any semblance of a Palestinian state. Moreover, attendees stated, Aitam declared that he had been urged to fight this roadmap by no less a figure than Richard Perle, former chairman of the Defense Policy Board, the Pentagon Advisory Panel. Well, what is going on here? Aitam told the Jewish leadership that he had a message from Perle informing him that the plan was to advance the roadmap and then to scuttle it. Sharon not only did not object to his minister visiting the United States to denounce the roadmap between the leaders of the major Jewish organizations, but he sent him on that mission. Several American Jewish leaders complained that they are confused by Sharon's willingness to have his chief representative from the cabinet denounce the plan he is on nominal record of supporting. At the very least, it's a mixed message, said Yaffe, president of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. I cannot remember, said Rabbi Amiel Hirsch, executive director of the Association of Reform Zionists in America, I cannot remember when a member of the cabinet spoke in support of the Israeli government's position endorsing the roadmap. In short, this has been a series of delegates sent with the explicit mandate of Sharon of giving the heads up to the heads of Jewish organizations that this is a game, this is a facade, this is but the preparation for something else, because this so-called roadmap, which is a cover for the confiscation of yet more Palestinian land, is but a roadmap for further occupation. Itam said, we will never accept a Palestinian state in the West Bank. In fact, he reiterated a plan for a Palestinian entity to be created in Jordan and the Sinai Desert, and the minister stated he has Richard Perle's support for these schemes. In short, brothers and sisters, the roadmap is a charade, like all of the charades, enlisting the Palestinian collaborationist leadership in their own destruction. And indeed, as this goes on, the Israeli armed forces, on a crash basis, have purchased Apache longbows. It was reported in Tel Aviv on the 13th. Israel's Air Force is upgrading the first of its Apache attack helicopter fleet on an urgent basis. Helicopters from the U.S. firm Boeing are being rushed to Israel. 41 AH-64A helicopters, a contract of as well for the upgrade of the Longbow Confederation. They are preparing for a destruction of this facade plan leading to the expulsion of the population, the seizure again of the Gaza Strip, with the destruction that we have seen in Jenin revisited on Gaza. And that is why the Israeli chief of staff, while this roadmap talk proceeds, made a statement that Arafat deserves death. Israel's Chief of Staff Lieutenant Moshe Yaalon, in remarks given to a French magazine, Arafat is a master terrorist who deserves death. And he stated that this would come in the context of taking the government of Syria down, as had been done in Iraq. Syria has a terrorist government. We have made plans to deal with it. While Arafat deserves death, the chief of staff of the Israeli armed forces, and simultaneously the foreign minister of Israel, Shalom, declared that Israel has targeted Iran, that Iran must be stopped within 2 years, that Israel has strategic plans for the removal of the regime, no less in Iran than in Syria. Foreign Minister Sharon, according to Haaretz, on the 12th of July, Aleph Ben's report, Israel sees Iran having nuclear weapons that will threaten the stability of the entire world. Under the cover of continuous war, the roadmap is but the preparation for the next wave of horror for the Palestinian people, the next attempts to expel, the next attempts to liquidate. Let us be clear about this. There is a struggle to be waged for a democratic and secular Palestine. As long as a colonial settler state remains in any part of Palestine, there will be no self-determination for the Palestinian people. The Jewish settler population itself, trapped and condemned to further insecurity and perpetual war. It is a struggle for exposure, a struggle for renewal, and a struggle for the removal of the colonial settler state in occupied Palestine.
You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Rav Shonman
and Maya Shon, The Roadmap, A Dead End of the Palestinian People. You can listen to it again at www.takingaim.info. As well, you'll find an archive of prior shows. You can reach us at 212-209-2953 or at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PacBell.net. Also, you can write to us at Taking Aim, Post Office Box 6345, Vallejo, that's V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California, 94591.
And that was Taking Aim, Ralph Schoen and Maya Schoen, and immediately following now is the WBAI Evening News and